Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and today's conversation is with William R. Ferris, chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Well, you've been credited with refocusing the endowment's mission from funding controversial projects to those that preserve America's heritage. Can you tell us about the process you used to shift the mission of the NEH?
Well, as a folklorist, I think of humanities as the human story. And I think of a proverb, an African proverb, that I often use in teaching my students folklore. The proverb says that when an old man or woman dies, a library burns to the ground. And I view the humanities as a work of urgency that we need to be about, preserving those stories, not only of our family, but understanding more deeply the stories of our nation's history, our literature, our philosophy, our folklore. These are all fields that we study, really, from kindergarten on. They are the humanities, and there is nothing controversial about this. It's simply getting a good education. And our founding legislation draws on the language of Thomas Jefferson, which says that a democracy must depend on an educated citizenry. And we in our democracy have to protect and nurture our education for all ages, from kindergarten through lifelong learning. And that's what the humanities is all about. There is nothing controversial about the work that we do. It is an urgently needed necessity for our nation to support the programs that we have.
NEH regularly deals with competing and sometimes conflicting interests. How do you keep all the stakeholders satisfied?
I view the various groups within the humanities as a parent would view children. You love them all. You want to nurture them all and take care of each of them. And that is exactly our approach. We have public programs that nurture the public television and radio and museum worlds. We have research programs that deal with scholarly research. We have education that assists classroom teaching and develops websites. We have challenge grants that help build long-term support for institutions. And we have what we call preservation and access, which is a way of preserving historic documents and making them available to the public. Now, all of these are part of what we think of as the pipeline of the humanities. We have to preserve the collections of papers in order that scholars can write about them and filmmakers can draw on the photography like Ken Burns has done. And eventually, these films and scholarly works will find their way into the classroom of K through 12. So in some ways, you can look at a decade-long process of preservation and making accessible resources that are then used and turned into very public, very accessible worlds. But all of these steps are important. And we view each area with equal care, and we try to be as fair as possible in supporting them all.
Money is often an issue, and in the past, it's been somewhat of a struggle. You testified after the budget cuts of 1996 that the NEH was forced to close down many of its core grant programs, lay off a quarter of its employees, and downsize many of its functions. How did you prioritize what would continue to receive funding in this period?
Actually, that all happened before I became chairman. It was several years after those deep cuts that I came on board. They clearly had a terrible effect on the agency. All of our younger staff who had come on fairly recently had to be let go. Many of our programs that people depended on in a variety of areas had to be either reduced or cut. And it's been my challenge to rebuild those programs, and either through congressional and White House support or through private support, to seek additional funding for these programs. And I'm delighted to say that we're on the right course, and both within Congress and the White House and within the public sector, we're getting a lot more help. The private support also is flowing in ways that I think, will steadily increase in the coming years.
Well, NEH was able to increase its budget in the last year. What lessons could you pass along to other leaders navigating the budget process?
Well, I'm very proud that we've had a $5 million increase over each of the last 2 years, and that was after flat funding for a number of years. My sense is that there are no shortcuts to this process. It's a process of learning to understand and respect the congressional leadership and the White House leadership, and over time, over a period of years, explaining carefully and clearly your programs, why they are important, and how they affect the American people. Because the bottom line here is that we are a democracy, and the endowment exists because of the generosity of the American people and their elected officials. We are responsible to those people, and to the degree that our programs enrich and support their lives in every part of the nation, then I think we will thrive and grow. And that is what we are doing, and the growth within our budgets and in other areas of the agency reflect that confidence in our work.
In 1999, the NEH was criticized for inviting President Clinton to deliver the endowment's annual Jefferson Lecture. What lessons can you pass along to other leaders faced with this level of controversy?
Well, our idea was, and I think it continues to be a valid idea, that every sitting president should have an opportunity at the end of their term to reflect on the humanities and on the role of history in their leadership during their 4-year period. Regardless of who the president might be, I think that would be a significant resource for the nation if we had such a resource on every president from George Washington to the present. It would be a treasure trove. And I continue to think that this is an idea that is very important, and we certainly are open to seeing this made a part of the future of the humanities if the leadership in the White House and Congress feel that it is appropriate.
In an era where all government agencies are being asked to produce results and track performance, how does NEH track and communicate performance information?
Well, we increasingly are using our website and electronic reporting of information from grantees and from audience participation in programs to monitor and track the results of our projects. We've also responded to the Government Performance and Result Act in creating what is called a performance plan for all of our projects. It establishes goals and sets forth a series of indicators that help us understand how our various grants are succeeding. And we, in turn, report that to Congress and the White House. I think technology is in our favor in that our website and our ability to use technology to move data quickly and to sort data is increasingly giving us a clear picture of how successful our projects are, and they are enormously successful. We can begin to see a summer institute for a high school teacher gives that teacher a much firmer knowledge of the subjects they teach. And then you can only imagine for the next 10, 20, maybe 40 or 50 years, that teacher, year after year, is a better teacher for hundreds and thousands of students who will then go forth and be better citizens. So you multiply that one teacher by hundreds of teachers at the secondary and college level, and then you multiply the numbers of students whose lives they touch. And you begin to see it's like a pebble dropped in the water and the ripples go out. Those are but one example of how our programs make our nations far stronger and far richer.
It's time for a break. We'll be right back with more of the Business of Government Hour and our conversation with William R. Ferris, Chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities.